The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, ensuring long-term growth in the world's greatest salmon fishery through investments in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality. The Bristol Bay RSDA. We are on board with you.
This is KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. I'm your host, Mike Mason. On today's program, we check in on the large push of salmon into and through the Nooshigak District and get the first genetic information of the season from the Port Moeller test fishery. We'll also look at some new research about how and when fish move through that test fishery area. All of that and more is coming up on today's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. This is the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report on KDLG. I'm Mike Mason. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game put the fleet intending to fish the Nooshigak District on short notice this morning, and they have announced fishing time. It's all based on a large push of fish into and through the Nooshigak District. Tim Sands is the area management biologist for the district.
We have this really big push of fish in the Nooshigak River, something beyond my imagination, I guess. As far as numbers of fish, our raw count today at 1 o'clock was around 133,000 fish. So obviously those get apportioned out in the Sockeye and Chum and Kings, but that's a big number. You know, we were at 72,000 as of yesterday. So of this 133,000, which is only half a day's worth of fish, I got to believe that there's a high percentage of them are sockeye. Even if it's only 50%, that's, I don't know, another 60,000 fish, and that's only half a day. So I see us pushing over 200,000 sockeye, certainly by tomorrow, in the Nooshigak. And that's very far ahead of our curve, obviously. We flew an aerial survey. We saw lots of fish below the sonar site, more fish than I've ever seen in the river, actually. Below the sonar site. The Wood River also has a fair amount of fish in it. We were at about 25,000 cumulative count there at 1 o'clock today. And at that point, we had a couple big counts. The fish were going by starting at over 6,000 an hour, even close to 10,000 an hour. So obviously, with that kind of passage, it doesn't take long to add up. I think we're going to hit our 100,000 mark on the Wood tomorrow, and so we want to fish in front of that. Also, with this forecast for some pretty severe wind, I think it'll make it tough fishing for folks, but it also means it'll push fish if there's more fish to push, so we need to try and harvest some of that.
On Thursday, sockeye escapement to the Nooshigak River spiked with over 60,500 fish counted at the sonar counting site at Portage Creek. That pushed the total escapement to over 72,500. That does not include the large push of fish being detected today. The escapement goal for the Nooshigak River is between 370,000 to 760,000 sockeye. At 3 o'clock today, Fishing Game announced fishing time for both the set netters and the drifters in the Nooshigak District. Set netters get to go fishing in the Nooshigak section for 24 hours from 11:30 tonight until 11:30 tomorrow night. Along with that, the set netters in the Agushik section have been extended through midnight June 24th. The drifters also get to go fishing with an 8-hour opening Saturday from 11 a.m. until 7 p.m. Fishermen should note that a mesh restriction of 5.5-inch mesh or smaller is in effect until further notice. Sands was able to take a look at the genetic data from the Port Moeller test fishery before announcing the fishing time for the drifters and the set netters.
Well, it's curious, you know, because the Nooshigak and Wood are right there even, you know, basically the same percentage. And so, obviously, everybody's wondering, is this is this just early or is it something more? And those are pretty low percentages for Wood River, but a high percentage for Nooshigak River. So, and the fact that the Wood forecast is so much more than the Nooshigak forecast, and the but the proportions are pretty much the same there. It's an interesting thing. We'll have to see when we get more information how it plays out. But certainly, you know, before when I looked at the before we had the genetic stuff, I was looking at the stations, and there wasn't a lot of fish being caught in the offshore stations, 10 and 12, and even station 8 wasn't that big. So I was kind of thinking that there wasn't that much Nooshigak district fish around. But apparently there's more than those stations indicated. So it'll be interesting to see how things play out. But right now, I feel like we're in a really good position as far as having good escapement early on in the Nooshigak, which has been our goal, and the woods should come along directly, I think.
One of the contributing factors that makes it difficult to manage the Nooshigak district is the King Salmon Run to the Nooshigak River. King escapement also spiked Thursday with about 3.3 thousand kings counted to push the season total up to 12.6 thousand. The escapement goal is 95,000 kings. Sand says that big push of kings put escapement within the historical curve the department uses to reach the escapement goal. The other big factor that Sands must consider is the escapement of sockeye to the Wood River. Forecast for the Wood River is 3.4 million. Over 7.2 thousand sockeye were counted as escapement to the Wood River on Thursday to push the total to nearly 7.7 thousand. Another 360 sockeye were counted this morning between midnight and 6 a.m. Sands confirms that large amounts of fish can hit the Wood River in a short amount of time, and he wants the fleet ready to respond.
We could easily be at 50,000 or more by the end of today. And if things continue, we could certainly hit 100,000 tomorrow. I think that's a very good possibility, and that's another reason why we want the fleet on short notice so we can respond to that.
Fishermen preparing to go fishing should note the some recent confusion caused by differences in the Nooshigak River tides listed in the various tide books that have been circulating around Bristol Bay. Sands confirms that not all of the books are correct.
It is an issue because all of our set net openings have to be based on the tide, so I'm using the NOAA tide predictions for Clark's Point that we got off the internet.
The issue is that the various tide books available don't agree with each other as to the exact size and time of the tides, and none of them matches up with the tide charts on the NOAA website. Stephen Gills, a senior scientist with NOAA's National Ocean Service Center for Operational Oceanographic Products and Services in Maryland.
We believe the most accurate ones to date are from our Tides and Currents website, tidesandcurrents.noaa.gov, under Tide Predictions. And we provide electronic tide predictions, both a graphical product and a tabular product, listing the times and heights of the high and low tides each day into the future. So those are based upon the latest information, observations of 3 months of data back in the summer of 2012. And we've updated the analysis using a time series analysis package. And because they're based direct upon the observations and not a time and range corrector to another station, for instance, that the hard copy tide tables use, we believe these are the most accurate and up-to-date tide predictions for the area.
NOAA made observations at the Clark's Point Station last summer, and that's where the most recent tide information on the website actually comes from. By the way, the tides we announce on KDLG are the tides from the NOAA website. Tim Sands' final advice for fishermen preparing to wet some nets is to remember that you must register with Fish and Game before you can fish commercially in the Nooshigak District. Fish and Game office in Dillingham is open until 5 o'clock today and will be open Saturday and Sunday from 8 a.m. until 12 noon. The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report will continue in a moment. You are listening to your source for commercial fishing information and news, the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report here on KDLG. Bristol Alliance Fuels in Dillingham says an equipment malfunction is to blame for some bad gas that was sold earlier this week. Customers who bought gas from Bristol Alliance Fuels, Bristol Express, or Stellings Enterprises between June the 10th and June the 17th and are experiencing difficulties are asked to call the tank farm in Dillingham. The number is 842-1234 to get assistance. That number once again, 842-1234. Bristol Alliance claims the problem has been fixed and the gasoline on hand has been tested and meets specifications. Over 404,000 sockeye were harvested in the Bristol Bay Commercial Sockeye Fishery Thursday to push the season total to over 1.3 million fish. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game is only reporting part of the total catch, so the actual harvest is likely bigger than what is being reported through Thursday. That's because ADF&G cannot release catch information for the Ugashik, Nushagak, or Togiak districts due to confidentiality reasons. Fish and Game must have more than two buyers in a district to report the harvest numbers, and those three districts don't have the needed number of buyers up and running. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game is releasing the most up-to-date escapement information and some of the harvest information in a partial daily run summary. The summary is being distributed via email and will not be available online until the full daily run summaries are produced. Thursday's commercial catch in the Igigik District was 194,000 sockeye to push the season total in the Igigik District to over 878,400 fish. Thursday's commercial harvest in the Naknek-Quijak District was 210,000 sockeye to push the season total in the district to over 496,200. As noted earlier, the Department of Fish and Game is not yet releasing harvest information in the Ugashik, Nushagak, and Togiak districts. Now looking at the escapement information, 45,300 sockeye were counted as escapement to the Igigik River Thursday to push the season total to 182,600 fish. The escapement goal for the Igigik River is between 800,000 to 1.4 million. Fish and Game's estimating there are another 35,000 sockeye in the Igigik River that have not yet been counted as escapement. The Naknek River counting towers are up and running, and the first full day of counting was Thursday. Just over 9,000 sockeye were counted. The escapement goal for the Naknek River is between 800,000 to 1.4 million. The Quijak River counting towers were scheduled to become operational today. In the Nushagak District, 60,500 sockeye were counted as escapement to the Nushagak River to push the season total to 72,500 fish. The escapement goal for the Nushagak River is between 370,000 to 760,000 fish. Sockeye escapement to the Wood River was counted Thursday at over 7,200 fish. Season total is now 7,600. The escapement goal for the Wood River is between 700,000 to 1.5 million. The counting towers on the Ugashik, Igushik, and Togiak rivers are not yet operational. Total run to the Igigik district, including harvest and escapement, is counted at just over 1 million fish. Total run thus far to the Naknek-Quijak district is over 505,000 sockeye, and the run thus far to the Nushagak district is counted at just over 80,000 fish. However, that does not include today's a large push of fish. Total run to the bay thus far, including harvest and escapement, is just over 1.6 million. Fish and Game reports that on Thursday, there were on average 407 sockeye per drift delivery in the Naknek-Quijak district. The number was 330 in the Igigik district. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game has released the first stock composition data from the sockeye harvested as part of the Port Moeller test fishery. Total of 877 fish were caught between June the 10th and the 17th that were sampled, and 190 of those fish were analyzed at the department's gene lab in Anchorage. Fishermen should note that the travel time between the Port Moeller test fishery area and the inshore districts is 5 to 8 days, so the genetic data represents fish that are either in or are nearly in the inshore districts. The results show that 31% of the fish analyzed were destined for the Igigik River, and that might help explain the strong early season harvest and escapement numbers coming out of that district. 25.7% of the fish are thought to be sockeye headed to the Ugashik District. 13.3% are believed to be headed to the Naknek River. Quijak River sockeye made up 9.2% of the analyzed fish. 7.8% were Wood River fish. 7.2% were bound for the Nushagak River. Just 2.2% were headed for the Alaknek River. The genetic signal for Igushik River sockeye was 1.9%. The genetic signal for Togiak River sockeye was very small at just 0.2%. One of the men involved in analyzing the sockeye sampled as part of the Port Moeller test fishery is fisheries geneticist Tyler Dan. He says care is taken to try and make the stock composition estimates reflect the actual sockeye resource swimming through the test fishery area.
What we're attempting to do is to best represent the stock composition of fish migrating through the test fishery. So if a majority of fish in a given period are caught at one station on a particular day, we want the same majority of our sample to come from that station on that day. So instead of choosing how many fish to genotype and include in the analysis from all of the fish that are sampled, we choose them in proportion to catch per unit effort. And so the catch per unit of effort we use are the replacement CPUE that Scott Rayborn of BBSRI provides, and it allows us to choose fish proportional to the catches that were observed at each station fished on the days we include in each sampling period.
Dan confirms that this has always been done when preparing the stock composition estimates, but this year it's especially important because of the spotty station catches as part of the Port Muller test fishery.
Station 6 on June 17th, the replacement CPUE was 184 for that station. The replacement CPUE for all stations over the dates we include in the first set of estimates, June 10 to June 17, was 905. So when you divide 184 by 905, that's approximately 20%. We also want the number of fish that we select to include in the analysis from Station 6 on June 17 to be about 20%. So we included 190 fish. Approximately 20% of that is 39 fish, which is the number that we chose from those samples.
The process of analyzing the genetic data from the Port Muller test fishery involves a lot of moving parts. First, there's the actual sampling on board the research vessel Pandelis, and then those samples are put on commercial aircraft headed to Anchorage so that they can be analyzed at the Fish and Game Gene Lab. Dan has nothing but praise for the ADF&G staff in Port Muller for handling the logistics.
The samples get handed off to department staff in Port Muller, and they're really clutch in this whole operation because, as you're all aware, logistics in rural Alaska are very challenging, especially this year with the transition between air carriers. We're more often flying from Port Muller to Cold Bay and then Cold Bay to Anchorage instead of what we've traditionally done in the past, Port Muller to King Salmon to Anchorage. So it's really, there's a lot of challenging steps in that chain of events, but the air logistics is maybe the most complicated. We've had weather delays due to fog, and this year we had a few delays, so we actually didn't receive the last samples that we included until yesterday at about 3 in the afternoon. We've got staff here in the lab that were here until about 12:30 last night extracting DNA, and then early this morning we genotyped those fish and ran the numbers to produce the estimate. So there really is a great big team effort on the behalf of a couple different organizations and a lot of links in the chain to arrive at estimates.
The stock composition estimates from the Port Muller test fishery can be found online on the website of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's Jane Conservation Laboratory. The Port Muller updates and the stock composition estimates can also be found on the website of the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association at bbrsda.com. And the ongoing Port Muller test fishery continues to record high index numbers, and Thursday was another good day of fishing. A total of 239 sockeye were caught Thursday, and catches at the outside station spiked with the largest catch of the season thus far. 76 sockeye were taken at Station 10. The catch at Station 8 was 42 sockeye. 66 fish were taken at Station 6. 43 sockeye were harvested at Station 4. Just 8 fish were taken at Station 2. 142 sockeye were taken from the 5 and an 1/8 inch mesh panels. 97 fish were taken in the 4.5 inch mesh panels. Thursday's fishing effort produced a daily replacement index number of 47. That pushes the cumulative replacement index number up to 337. The daily traditional index number was 96. That pushes the cumulative traditional index number up to 800. That is still the highest cumulative index number on record for this point in the season. The previous high was an index number of 762 recorded back in 1995. That was a year that produced an over 60 million fish run. The average cumulative traditional index number is 440. In an update that was issued Thursday night, the crew of the test boat confirmed that they hope to fish from Station 8 into Port Muller today in an effort to avoid the rough seas forecast for today. The marine forecast was calling for southeast winds 20 knots, increasing today to 35 knots this afternoon, west of Port Moeller, and there's a gale warning in effect through tonight. The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report will continue coming up in just a moment.
The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is made possible in part by AIFMA, the Alaska Independent Fishermen's Marketing Association, 1-800-816-3741.
This is listener-supported public radio, KDLG. As Bristol Bay season is just getting underway, another nearby sockeye season has been going strong for a couple of weeks now. Last week in the Chignik, 70 or so of the up to 58-foot purse seine vessels were busy harvesting 10 or 15,000 pounds a day. KDLG's Dave Binegar had a quick look around and filed this report.
Late last week, only one of the fleet's vessels was moored up at the new year-round boat harbor in Chignik Bay.
How's it going?
Good, how are you, man?
Not bad. Doing some repairs?
Oh, always, man. Always.
Doug Peterson is the skipper of the 48-foot Saner Diana.
I grew up fishing here. This is my first year back in 17 years. I started out fishing up there. I had a boat when I was 20 years old, but I fished with my family since I was like 6 years old. So, yeah, I definitely grew up with the fishery here.
The Diana is a beautiful boat, just a couple of years old, and the skipper and his nephew, Roddy Carlson, are running the RSW system as he gives a quick tour.
It's like an expanded version, I guess, of a Bristol Bay gull netter. They're all pretty fancy little boats, you know, and comfortable. Of course, I've got my own wheelhouse up there, so I stay up there at my bunk and everything up there. We don't pick fish here. We roll them on board, up to 3,000 pounds in a roll. That's so much easier than gill netting. It's efficient. If they had these boats up there, one-fifth of the fleet could catch the entire. And that's why they didn't go. They restricted boats like this and the size just so it allows more participants. You know, so much fish up there, it's fine for, there's like 1,800? There's only 100 here, or a little less, 98 or 96 here.
When fishing, Peterson and his skiff man will set out their 220 fathoms of net.
We cut him loose, he's attached to it, and he hangs onto it and sets it out and kind of hold it perpendicular to the direction of the fish. Put a curve in it, and they start stacking up inside. Usually it's a 30-minute set, close up, take it in, pucker the bottom, and roll them on board. This, we got two fish holes. This one that we're chilling down holds 30,000 pounds. And we've got we call it a Sunday hole back there. It holds another 15,000. We generally don't use it. We use it for storage. Fishing gets real heavy, then we'll empty it out with our extra supplies and we'll use it if we have to. I prefer not to because the boat sits up nice and high now. Fill that full, she goes down pretty deep. It's less safe out on the rough water fishing, you know, because the deck's awash and knocks people down, so.
The fish are nice and
nice
chilled.
And cold. It should be at 34 to 36 degrees.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm ready for a good season.
Managing the Chignik area fishery falls to a small fish and game staff led by area management biologist Todd Anderson. He and his staff are based at the Weir Counting Station on the Chignik River, a one-of-a-kind setup to count sockeye escapement.
The Chignik Weir itself here is the largest weir in the world that I'm aware of. It's been in operation since 1922, first under the Federal Bureau of Commercial Fisheries and taken over by the state at statehood. It's unique geologically in a way. We're close enough to the lagoon that we have a tidal input here, so we can float a pile driver to put 33 spruce pilings that we ship over from Kodiak at the start of the season. It's about a 400-foot long weir that we install. We do all of that just for two small camera gates, about a foot and a half, 2 feet by 2 feet, that allow passage, uninterrupted passage throughout the season. And the video feed is sent into the office, and we do counts daily, starting the last few days of May, going all the way through the first couple of days of September. Every hour, we do 10-minute counts and extrapolate that for the hour. Certainly over the course of the season, it's quite accurate.
On the processing side, the only cannery in the Chignik was the Trident plant that burned to the ground in 2008 and hasn't been rebuilt. There are four buyers this year, two cash buyers, plus ISA from Kodiak, and in Chignik Bay, a Signature Seafoods floating processor under contract with Trident. That's the 225-foot vessel Ocean Fresh. And giving us a tour on board was John Kelly.
I am the Alaska Operations Manager. It's Signature Seafoods. Our vessel is the Ocean Fresh. We have 110 people on board. The season was phenomenal so far. We're going to have a great season.
I'll take you through the plant, the way of a fish.
So these two are your standard fish pumps as any other tender. The outside pump pumps from the tender, and we have two options. We have four RSW tanks in the deck below us that hold between 75 and 90,000 pounds per tank. So we can either go into those tanks or we can take them straight to the line. And generally when we're running tenders that are 65, 70% one species, we'll go straight to the line, sort it from that way. But occasionally you're going to get a tender that's 25% chum, 25% cove, and so forth. So we'll sort it up there, and each tank will hold one species.
From there, the fish go to one of three different lines where they're head and gutted one way or another.
On the outside lines, we have the Ryko or Morel header gutter systems. First machine takes off the head, takes out the gills. Second machine removes the guts and eggs. Down the middle line, larger kings, larger fish, and it's a totally manual line where it's all done by hand. But everything converges on the line where humans are inspecting every fish. If the fish is damaged, unusable, it goes back into the grinding system. Otherwise, it's cleaned and it goes down into the fish cleaning system. And this washes the fish top and bottom. But this is designed for farm fish. Farm fish has a lot of slime on it. And it's essentially a car wash for fish. And it will clean the inside, outside of a fish, and obviously the slime off of it and anything else that's left on it.
At that point, every fish passes one of three employees who inspect them for size, species, and grade, and their weight on a motion-compensated scale. The fish go into a pan, then to the freezer, are broken out, glazed, stored in bags, and put into 1,000-pound totes. Every box carries a label that Kelly says, if a customer has a complaint, he can track the fish all the way back to the fisherman, even years later. One thing he's particularly proud of is the work schedule kept on the ocean fresh.
Many companies work their employees 16-hour days. We don't. So that entry-level person up there you saw many of, versus the engineers to the captain to myself, we work 12-hour days. And it's a long story, but we can look at the injury rates on employees, no matter what level, whether it be entry level or management, after you're working 12 hours, your accident rate skyrockets. We have four shifts. We run 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So we have a shift starts at 1 o'clock and 7 o'clock a.m. and p.m. When they start a 7 o'clock shift, they'll work 3 hours and have a 15-minute break. Work 2 hours, 45 minutes, have a half-hour lunch. Work 3 hours and have a 15-minute break, and work the other 2 hours, 45 minutes, and they're off work. But doing this, our accident rates are low, our productivity is high, and with four breaks like that, we try to train them on four different jobs. So they're using different muscle groups, their mind is engaged, and they're not dying of boredom.
Kelly says they'll process between 14 and 15 million pounds of sockeye in their season, which started on June 10th and runs through August 20th. The product will ship extensively in the lower 48 and all over the world. Last year, the 70 or so permit holders fishing in the Chignik's hauled in about 1.8 million sockeye. The ex-vessel value of the fishery was nearly $14 million, which, as Anderson says, rounded out to a pretty good average for the fleet.
Averaged anywhere from $150,000 per permit to upwards of $280,000 per permit for the season. This year is looking like much like last year, probably anywhere from $150,000 average to $250,000 average.
And when the sockeye season is over, the purse seine fleet in the Chignik's can retool to fish halibut, Pacific cod, and even crab throughout the rest of the year. For the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report, I'm Dave Benninger.
That concludes today's edition of the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. It airs each Friday, Saturday, and Sunday during the fishing season at straight up 4 p.m. You can find the report and many of the stories included in the report on our website at kdlg.org. And if you have something to add to the report or you want to make a comment, you can send an email to mike@kdlg.org. Please be safe, watch the weather, and tune in tomorrow for another edition of the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report.
The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, ensuring long-term growth in the world's greatest salmon fishery through investments in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality. The Bristol Bay RSDA. We are on board with you.